This is a meeting of the Oxford Union Society. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or should that be, this is a meeting of the Oxford Union Society. In it! Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, I hope you've studied the photograph in the thumbnail. I hope you've studied that photograph, and I hope you've really thought about it. And I hope you've really thought about everything that it embodies, everything that it symbolises, everything that it betokens. Because I think it is such an important photograph. If a photograph could capture a million words, then that would be it. I mean, just look at what you see. What's it telling you? The Oxford Union Society, Oxford University is the oldest university in Britain. And the Oxford Union Society was founded in 1823, and it is probably the world's most prestigious debating society. Its past presidents have included people such as William Gladstone. And yet, what do you see there? It is as though it captures in one photograph what happens towards the end of empire. Gladstone, of course, being the height of empire. Towards the end of empire, when the people that founded the institutions, the great institutions, they've just lost their will. They've lost their sense of importance. They've lost their sense that there's something eternal and something greater. They've lost their sense that there's something worth fighting for. They've lost their sense that they are superior, that they are the best, that they, in the words of Tennyson, also at the height of empire, are the roof and crown of things. Okay, he was Cambridge, but anyway, you get the general idea. They've lost it. There's no will anymore. These people haven't been subject to harsh selection for a very long time. And so the kind of group-oriented values, the kind of martial values that allow them to build it all up and become great, have basically been selected out of the gene pool or have been overwhelmed by other selfish, individually oriented values which have then managed to take over the culture and have pushed people in a maladaptive, individually oriented, selfish direction. So they don't strive for power anymore. They don't go and leave school and think, I'll set up a business. They want to go and leave school and get a job and then moan because there aren't any jobs to get. There's no will. And so that's why you see what you see in that photograph. Secondly, there's a fatigue. You get a fatigue towards the end of empire. You just get the general feeling that everything has run out. Life seems pointless. And part of that is probably because towards the end of empire, you're so rich that you're instincts towards things like having children, instincts towards things like ethnocentrism and the need to fight, instincts towards worrying about mortality salience and, you know, your children dying and whatever, so that religion hits in, the instinct hits in, and you have a sense of the eternal and a sense of something worth fighting for. These things all sort of dissipate. These things all sort of go. But if you are, one of the things that makes you have these instincts, one of the things that induces religiosity and a sense of the eternal and a sense of something greater is that you feel excluded. Yeah, it's stress and mortality salience. They induce these instincts. But it's also a feeling of exclusion. So if you feel that you are not part fully of the society in which you are in, which is a maladaptive situation to be in, then religiosity strongly hits in. A desire to have children strongly hits in. Ethnocentrism and group orientation strongly hit in. And this, of course, permits you to take power. So you don't feel the same sense of fatigue. You feel a drive. You feel there is something more. You go for it. You take the citadels. And, well, you know, need I say more? Also, lost vigour. If you have been under weakened selection for a very long time, there is just less vigour. There is less of a fight. You do not have, you lack. If harsh Darwinian selection and child mortality of 50% collapsed in your society in about 1800, where it began to collapse in another society in more like 1900, that's going to make a huge difference to the modal nature of the people in terms of traits such as being group-oriented, being ethnocentric, being religious, and all of these traits that are at least 50% genetic, if not considerably more than that. It's going to make a huge difference to the nature of those people, and the nature of, and the extent to which they have drive. Those people will have more vigour, and then it will be the elite of those people. When a society becomes decadent and it allows lots and lots of, well, you can see what it has allowed, then it will be the elite of those people. So the people that are particularly high in those traits that will find themselves in the seat of empire. And so you have greater vigour. And finally, you just have, I think, what wokeness or proto-wokeness has done to the English people. It has guilt-tripped them. It has made them feel that they're no good. It has made them feel there's no point trying. It has made them feel that everything's just run out and it's pointless. It has made them feel that they shouldn't even try for status because they should feel guilty about trying for status. It has made them feel that it is wrong for them to care about their own people. And so all of this comes together quite beautifully, beautiful in the sense of sort of simply and clearly, in that image. That is the Oxford Union Society in 2025. That is the Oxford Union Society, where the president of the Oxford Union Society was allowed into to the university to do politics, philosophy and economics, which is a highly competitive degree, where the typical offer is 3 A's. And he got an A and 2 B's, which almost always means that you get rejected from Oxford and you have to go to some other posh university, some other Oxford reject type university, Bristol, Durham or London or Edinburgh or whatever. That's what happens. They won't let you in with an A and 2 B's. In fact, increasingly, even the sort of the wannabe Oxfords won't let you in with an A and 2 B's. So you can see an A and 2 B's now is not an A and 2 B's 25 years ago, because more people are doing A levels now. Everyone does A levels now, pretty much. So it's incredible that they let him in. Now I suppose it could be that they let him in because he was so brilliant. He was so brilliant in his exam and in his interview that they gave him an unconditional offer. But if that were the case, I suppose, why would he even bother of trying to get an A and 2 B's? He'd have just failed his A-levels and got into Oxford. And they did used to do that. They did used to give unconditional offers if they thought someone was superbly good. But it's showing you, of course, that's the other thing, which is that the university has changed from being one broadly focused on excellence, on brilliance, although there was a lot of corruption and people from public schools getting in because they knew the right people and whatever, but it's changed basically from that, at least trying to be that, to putting other considerations, other political considerations, ahead of that. And that also marks a shift. But yeah, I think that picture embodies so much. Please share it as widely as you can. Well, I hope that has been of interest, and if it has, could you please, please, please subscribe? Could you subscribe here on YouTube, and could you subscribe on my Substack, that's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most based stuff I can't put on YouTube. I put in-person interviews, blogs, vlogs, film I make, film, blogs, vlogs, films I make, and if you like what I do, you can support for the cost of around a pint of beer a month. And I will see you all soon, chaps, and goodbye. Are you ready for the future of the West?